This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello, Falcoholics. What is up? Welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live, episode 290. We're almost to 300, folks. What a long and strange trip it's been, of course. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic. Kevin, joined by my co-host, Adnan Ekic, as always, at Say Which Way on the Twitter X, whatever the hell they're calling it these days. Adnan, welcome back to the show once again. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, yeah. It's, you know, this is where we see where all the diehards are, because it is June 12th, and all we have to talk about is minicamp, which, you know, I'm contractually obligated to tell you guys that minicamp is very important, and that you guys should click on all of our articles on thefalcoholic.com, and, you know, listen to all of the takes about minicamp, and that minicamp is, it's an incredibly important time period, even though it's not.
So important, they absolutely had to have all 3 days. Wait, I'm hearing that they canceled the third day. all right, I think they had family day, which I think is like a day, you know. And you'll notice if you look around the league, guys, like lots of teams just do like team building stuff or whatever on the third day of minicamp. It's really not a big deal. Unless you're Aaron Rodgers and you're missing it unexcused, then it's a huge deal that everyone has to talk about because, you know, we have to talk about something. So at least it's not the Falcons drafting Michael Penix anymore. You know, I think they realized they had to move on from that at some point. So
honestly, I was really hoping that we would have some tampering news to talk about at this point, but the NFL still hasn't, you know, announced anything. So, you know, knowing their luck, they'll announce something tomorrow after the show's already done.
Yeah, I left Monday wide open. I was like, all right, it didn't come out. That's fine. I'm sure the news will drop this week and I'll have a pod ready to go Monday morning, and still nothing. So there's no pod on Monday. I mean, it was like, wow, just nothing to talk about. So, you know, and yeah, this is the time of year that sometimes I will go down to just two shows a week. You guys, you know, understand there's just not enough content. You know, it is what it is. But we're going to get into some interesting copy. Yeah, no, Joe, that's a good one. I will say, I did like a little teaser into the offensive stuff. I'm looking more into that. I have subscribed to Match Quarters, which if no one's done that before, that's a great Substack or whatever it is. And they go super in depth into like the Vic Fangio style defenses and how that stuff works. And it's quite a bit more complicated to talk about than I would say the offensive stuff is, at least at this stage. So I'm definitely going to be continuing to digest that content so I can actually produce a show that is legible, understandable for the average viewer on that. But that is definitely something I'm looking into, Joe, to give you guys more of an insight into these schemes and the sort of things we can look for, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Before we dive in, guys, that's one of the things we're going to talk about to some extent tonight is, you know, how have the Falcons really changed this offseason from since Raheem Morris has come in to now the end of the offseason officially with minicamp ending. So we're going to dive into that. Before we do, I want to bring you guys a real quick word from our sponsor, betonline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals, for the Stanley Cup Finals this season, including every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. Definitely sounds like a fun NHL Stanley Cup Finals, right? I don't watch a lot of hockey, but these games, I mean, this seems pretty exciting, honestly, like especially these finals games, like because fans get like hyped about hockey. I'll give them that for sure. And then I was worried that like the NBA finals were just gonna go like the Mavs were gonna go down like 3-0 to the Celtics, but it seems like maybe that's gonna be a little bit more interesting. So
they might, they're down 2-0 and it starts in 30 minutes. So you know,
I thought somebody won. I thought they won the third game, but maybe I don't know. You can tell I don't really watch it. Yeah,
the third game is tonight, and yeah, the Stanley Cup finals are also really exciting too. Yeah. See, with hockey, I'm more of a casual hockey fan just because you know Atlanta lost their team like R.I.P. to the Thrashers.
R.I.P. Thrashers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Thrashers were in town. I was watching every game the way I watch every Falcons game. Like, I was dieharding the NHL. But, you know, I like tuning in the, you know, for the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm definitely more of a casual viewer now, but it is super exciting. You know, that's a real sport right there. Like, yeah. You know, shout out to hockey, and hopefully Atlanta gets a team in a few years and I can go back to being a diehard NHL fan.
Yeah, no, it's been exciting, and guys, as always, BetOnline's got all your betting stuff, and when the game's over, BetOnline is launching their new online casino. You can play online blackjack, online poker, you can unwind with over one of their over 150 online slots games. That's a lot of slots games. So yeah, whatever you guys are interested in, you can head to that website, BetOnline, today to get in on the action, and just make sure when you sign up to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, so we're going to dive into some of the changes that we think are maybe the most meaningful, most interesting, etc., with this Falcons team that we've seen basically since Raheem Morris came into town. And I think a good one to start with would be just the huge emphasis on improving the quarterback position that we just never really saw under Arthur Smith. I mean, he was here for 3 years, and the most they invested in it was a third-round pick into Desmond Ridder, which, I mean, I think we were all intrigued by Desmond Ridder and the idea of him being a developmental quarterback. But that was, you know, that's not a huge quarterback investment. Just a day two pick there, and sort of signing stopgap guys, you know, Marcus Mariota and then Taylor Heinicke. But now in the first offseason of Raheem Morris, we've signed the most expensive veteran quarterback available in Kirk Cousins and drafted a quarterback in the top 10. So pretty huge change in priorities. What do you think about the change in that strategy? I mean, obviously the quarterback play was not good enough under Arthur Smith, so they needed to do something. But, you know, do you think they needed to do this much?
I mean, you know, we know my thoughts very well about, you know, signing Cousins and then drafting Penix. I think it was, I personally think it was doing too much. Like, I think if you're going to do it, you go one route or the other route. So you either go all in on Cousins or you go all in on this youth movement with Penix. But clearly, they, you know, had a great emphasis on fixing the most important position in sports, in all of sports, not just in football. But we know how the quarterback position in football is more important than any other position in any other sport, you know, by far. And I think it was sort of a warning regarding. So I feel like Arthur Smith's tenure here was more of a cautionary tale than anything else of, you know, he was here for 3 years. He did not invest he and Fontenot. Like, I'm not here to just completely throw all of, you know, all of the blame onto Arthur Smith for the Falcons not getting quarterback. That was a joint, you know, effort between both he and Terry Fontenot. But basically, the regime has not invested into in a quarterback. And, you know, despite, you know, all of the cap space that they have had, despite, all the cap space starting last offseason, despite all of the investment they made to bring in a Jesse Bates, to re-sign a Chris Lindstrom, you know, they had Cordarrelle Patterson. They squeezed you know, all they could out of Cordarrelle Patterson. But basically, despite all the investment everywhere else, last season was an abject failure. They won 7 games. And the reason why it was an abject failure was because of the quarterback position. And at the end of the day, it not only cost Arthur Smith his job, but I think it sort of did put Terry Fontenot on a bit of a warmer seat. Like, I don't think that Terry Fontenot is sitting on the coldest possible seat as the general manager of this team right now. I think if this team has another losing season, then there's going to be some definite questions to be asked. So Terry Fontenot knows that. Raheem Morris is coming in, and Raheem Morris doesn't want a repeat of, you know, what Arthur Smith just went through regarding not investing in a quarterback. You know, it's that old saying, right? A smart man will learn from his own mistakes. A wise man will learn from the mistakes of others. So it feels like Raheem Morris is sort of learning from Arthur Smith's mistake. And, you know, I feel like they came together and they very you know, probably very quickly came to the realization that if this fails, it is not going to fail because of the quarterback position. And you know what? I get it. Like, you know, Kirk Cousins, you know, say what you want about him, but he's what, a four-time Pro Bowler. He's still playing at a high level. I think last year was going to be the best year of his career statistically up until he got hurt. And, you know, he can still give you a couple of years of really high-end play. And I think he will be enough to take you, you know, over the hump to win this division. We made our predictions the last couple of shows. I predicted 11 wins. I think you predicted 10 wins. Mm-hmm. So we're buying into it. The fan base is buying into it. You know, I'm sure the coaching staff has bought into it. I think the players have bought into it. So, it's one of those things where Arthur Smith was a cautionary tale, and now the next man in charge is learning from that. He's listening to that tale, and he's like, this isn't, I'm not going to repeat those same mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think it was a necessary change. I mean, it's kind of played out in multiple facets of this offense. I'm sure we'll get to the changes that we're likely to see in terms of the offensive scheme and the emphasis on receivers. That might be the next topic we get to. But just, it's like a huge shift. It's like monumental. It's like basically like, well, the quarterback's not that important to our scheme, to like, it's the most important thing ever. And in fact, we're going to like overspend essentially to make sure we get the quarterback position right for the long term. It's kind of jarring, and I know that's, you know, a reason that people were upset with the move, and you know, it'll be a while before we find out, I think, one way or the other, whether this was the right path or not. But I certainly feel better about the direction of the offense under either Kirk Cousins or Michael Penix, considering that we just had such a bad quarterback situation for the last 2 years, essentially. So, and yeah, Joe, I think you're absolutely right about Raheem Morris kind of always having the philosophy of valuing quarterback. I mean, we know from reporting that, you know, one of Raheem's main pitches when he was applying to be the full-time head coach, not just the interim, back in, you know, 2020 or 2021, that offseason, basically he that was his pitch. Like, we need to find a succession plan for Matt Ryan as soon as possible. And you know, the Falcons didn't hire him. And, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons that they didn't. Obviously, it would have been a tough sell to the fan base, who were already sort of done with the Dan Quinn experience. But, you know, I think that the idea to find a succession plan for Matt Ryan was a good one. And I think we were all kind of shocked that they didn't go that route in 2021. And would Justin Fields have been the right guy to do that? We'll probably never know, right? Because
I think their plan was Deshaun Watson.
Well, yeah, 2022, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the succession plan of, like, and you know, we knew that was an Arthur Blank driven decision. I don't really put blame on the front office for that. I feel like that was an owner meddling type situation, and I think that sort of really sped up this deterioration of the quarterback position, because I the plan was absolutely to have Matt Ryan on board in 2022. And we know that because they had agreed to a contract restructure. They just didn't file the paperwork because Deshaun Watson called Arthur Blank and he was like, hey, come get me. So, you know, pretty much that pretty much pulls the rug from under the team, because obviously Matt Ryan doesn't want to stay after they just tried to get Watson, and Watson thankfully doesn't sign with the team, because that would be a disaster right now. Because it's a disaster for the Browns, for sure.
Yeah.
I think his cap hit is, what, $61 million this year, and then another $61 million next year. And he does not look like what he looked like in Houston. And, you know, then the team has the plan B of signing Marcus Mariota. They stick with him for far too long. We don't really see what Desmond Ridder is in his rookie year, and then you waste another year with Desmond Ridder last season. So it's just been, I don't know, it's just been a comedy of errors ever since that decision to sort of go after Deshaun Watson. And that is, you know, in fairness, that was an ownership thing. So, yeah. You know, Arthur Blank definitely deserves his fair share of the blame for this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we dodged a big bullet there. I mean, I think we all know that, obviously, in hindsight, but I think even at the time, pretty much universally on this program and at the Falcoholic, I mean, we were all like, don't do this. Don't do it. It's a bad idea. And I mean, I think we all thought it was a bad idea for the off the field reasons, but it turns out that it was just as bad of an idea for the on the field reasons, because he has just never gotten back to what he was in Houston. And I'm beginning to doubt that it will ever be that way again, given what we've seen. I mean, I don't know exactly what the issue is. I mean, obviously Watson has dealt with some injuries and things like that. It's just, I don't know if his heart's in the game. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to say. It just doesn't look like
there's no pressure on him to really, yeah. Like, he's, you know, all that money is guaranteed.
Yeah. So, and it's just like,
it's a lot of money guaranteed. I think
it's a lot of money.
Oh my God, it's a lot of money. So it's so much money that the owners, you know, let's be honest. I mean, this isn't an official report, but let's be honest, the owners colluded to make sure that no one ever gets, you know, fully guaranteed contracts again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I digress.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, just glad we dodged that bullet. I like the path that they're on at the quarterback position. You know, we've talked about it. I think we, you know, obviously we're going to have to see how it all plays out. But I like Penix and I like Kirk Cousins, and I haven't been able to, and you can already tell, Adnan, just from like the clips of OTAs and stuff like that, that like the passing game is like just better. I mean, it's like there's like downfield throws like early, you know, they're not just like doing like dump offs every single, you know, route or anything like that. I think it's going to be more interesting.
I still remember people fawning over the dump off stats of Desmond Ridder last year.
They were beautiful dump offs. Yeah.
I feel like I was just screaming into the void saying that these are three yard like flat routes. Like, this isn't impressive. This isn't something that should be like getting you excited for the season, but you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like you should be. Yeah.
Other, you know, I mean, fans, I get, but you know, other, you know, team writers were also sort of falling for it. But yeah, I mean, hopefully. Maybe this year in training camp they will show who threw that, because who, you know, we're not allowed to record 707s or 909s. Hopefully we'll be able to this year. Yep. But you know, let's be honest, we probably won't. So hopefully the team media that is, you know, allowed to record some of those throws, you know, maybe they will show who the quarterback is. Hashtag who threw it.
It seems like that's been a point of emphasis, at least in the team's clips that they've tweeted out. So, you know, I think for sure we're going to get a little bit more of that. But I know we had a question from Robert Kelly asking about the cornerback they signed recently, Harrison Hand. They waived, I believe, undrafted free agent Anthony Sau to make that move. And yeah, like, I actually do have Hand takes, Harrison Hand takes, that is. You know, no hand model takes or anything like that here. That we probably should save that for Alan Sterk, who is a model, actually. I don't think he's a hand model, but you know, I know he does some modeling. Shout out to Alan Sterk. But yeah, Hand was actually a guy that I was in on in 2020, scouting for Dan Quinn's defense. Obviously, he was one of my like day three guys that I liked. And his thing was, he was like, simultaneously like not as tall as you want, but he did have really good length. Like, he's got over almost 32 inch arms, which is really good length for a corner, almost 200 pounds. He was like a great cover three sort of developmental corner, which is what Dan Quinn was running and what the Falcons are gonna run. They're gonna run a lot of cover three in this defense, if it's anything like what the Rams ran last year. So Hand makes a lot of sense for this scheme, for Dan Quinn's scheme, as well as like a big physical outside corner. I know like his thing was that he just like didn't move super well. Like, I mean, I think his testing was ultimately okay, but his three cone was not very good. He's explosive, like straight line, ran a great 10-yard split, but just like his change of direction needed a lot of work. His footwork, sort of the finer details of that stuff, needed a lot of work. I don't know how much he's evolved in that way. It's definitely been, obviously he got drafted in 2020. So, I mean, hopefully he's worked on that some, but he's definitely like someone that would probably be a really good special teams guy because of his, you know, straight line speed and physicality. But yeah, other than that, I, you know, he's probably just here to compete maybe for a practice squad spot. So we'll see. You know, I mean, obviously, like the corner depth chart is not settled, so he could be here to compete for cornerback six. I mean, to be honest. So unless you're like really all in on the Kevin King experience, which, you know, again, maybe, right? But maybe that's a good segue into talking about the corner group, because that's one of the other things that we've learned, I think, or at least that's changed, is this new coaching staff, which has also got a lot of the old coaching staff, especially in terms of this, you know, to some extent. I know Jerry Gray was a big coach on in terms of the secondary last year. He's still here, but they do have a new secondary coach. And obviously Jimmy Lake comes over with an enormous background in, you know, secondary coaching as the new defensive coordinator. The Falcons seemingly are committing, obviously, to Dee Alford as a starter, which is great because I don't really see any reason that he shouldn't have been a starter. I think it was a mistake to take him off the field, and I think we saw that play out a lot over the final weeks of the season, with Nickel being a problem spot for sure. But also that Mike Hughes is playing outside and not playing the slot, which is a good thing in my opinion. Also that, of course, Clark Phillips is heavily involved in the competition with Mike Hughes for that sort of second outside corner spot. If you're not overly enthused to hear those are the two names in contention for cornerback two, that maybe is another topic that we could get to. But what do you think about how they're sort of, I don't know how to describe it, sort of they're shuffling guys around, but also kind of weirdly not investing in the cornerback room and sort of really thinking that they're just going to be able to coach a group up from, you know, not necessarily guys that aren't like good. Like, I mean, Mike Hughes, former first round pick, obviously only played his good starting years in Kansas City as an outside corner. So maybe it's actually smart to move him back outside. Dee Alford, I think, in the slot's a good idea. You know, Clark Phillips up and down as a rookie, but could be interesting. But there wasn't anywhere near the investment that we thought, but the group does seem to be taking shape. What do you think about how the secondary group has sort of changed in comparison to last year?
I mean, it hasn't changed much in comparison to last year.
What? You know, Jeff Okuda's gone. You know,
they lost Okuda, which, yeah. I mean, Okuda was losing his spot late on in the season either way. I don't think that project ended up being as successful as they would have hoped. Because, I mean, yeah, by the end of the season, he was benched for Clark Phillips. But, yeah, I don't think I've made up much of a secret that I'm worried about the secondary as a whole, just because coming into, and you and I agreed, and a lot of people agreed, coming into the offseason, you know, cornerback, safety, these are two positions that have to be a point of emphasis, as well as wide receiver. And I mean, in fairness, they have, you know, invested some in wide receiver. They gave Darnell Mooney that contract, which, you know, we'll see. They traded for Rondale Moore, who I feel like Rondale Moore could be good with a change of scenery away from Arizona. But then, I mean, you know, Casey Washington, late round pick, who everyone seems to be fawning over at this point in minicamp. But then you look at cornerback and Antonio Hamilton, I think he will make the team. Kevin King hasn't played in a couple years. And even when he played, he wasn't really good.
Super, like, boom-bust corner. Yeah.
Yeah, not what you want with your cornerback. Like,
it's a little risky. Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
You know, Clark Phillips, I think they are, you know, believing in Clark Phillips as cornerback too. And, you know, I like Clark Phillips. We all like Clark Phillips as, you know, the main guy. We saw the limitations with Clark Phillips last year against the Saints in that season finale. And I think bigger wide receivers and, you know, more experienced quarterbacks will be able to take advantage of the lack of height. Like, it's not like a Brent Grimes situation. I know the Pelicans had, you know, Grimes, who was also an undersized cornerback, because Grimes could jump out of the gym. Like, Brent Grimes was insanely athletic.
Yeah.
Clark Phillips is very, very good, but he, you know, the reason why he fell to where he did for the Pelicans was because, you know, because of the height. And then, you know, we like D. Alford. A.J. Terrell is locked in at cornerback one. But, yeah, like, they have not invested in this secondary much at all. Like, they've brought in some camp bodies. And, you know, Harrison Hand is another guy, camp body. He hasn't played since 2022. And it's something where I am genuinely worried about this secondary, and not just cornerback, but, you know, safety as well. Strong safety. I mean, we know that Jesse Bates is, he's a stud. He's locked in, Pro Bowl level player. But then strong safety, like, are we trotting out Richie Grant? Like, is DeMarco Helams? We like DeMarco Helams, but, you know, is his coverage going to be good enough to be a starter at strong safety? And in fairness, we don't know. Like, the offseason isn't over. Maybe they sign someone leading up to training camp, and all we can talk about is what we see on the depth chart right now. And what I see on the depth chart right now, I don't think this, you know, cornerback group is good enough right now going into the season. I wouldn't be comfortable with it. And God forbid A.J. Terrell goes down, because then you're talking about, you know, without Terrell, arguably the worst cornerback group in the league. Like, I don't think that's hyperbolic, you know, for me to say that. But, yeah, hopefully they do legitimately invest in it. And hopefully they do bring in, you know, a veteran player, or they make a trade to bring in an actual contributor and not, you know, just one of these camp bodies.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And, I'm thinking that the belief, there's obviously a lot of belief in their ability to coach these guys up. And that's always been something that Raheem Morris has believed in. And to their credit, the Rams, like, you could probably remember, we were talking about the Rams, I think, before the season. I was like, like, that defense is going to be bad. They're basically relying on like 10 rookies to play like meaningful roles on this team. And like, not every single one of those rookies ended up being good, but like, they got great seasons out of a lot of rookies. So clearly there's an emphasis on the coaching being a big part of it. And if it works, it's great, because you've got all these young, cheap players that are playing like good roles for your team. Like, that is great. That's what you want. But we just haven't seen the Falcons have success doing that, really, in any recent year. So, I mean, that's why we're questioning it. We'll have to see how it shakes out to know for sure if it's going to work or not. But it is also, the Falcons are going to be going to a different defense. So it's possible that this switch to a very zone-heavy, you know, system, at least compared to what the Falcons ran last year. The Falcons were one of the most man-heavy teams in the NFL last year. The Rams last year were running zone like 60% of the time or more, basically. And I think that's kind of flipped more for the Falcons. So, you know, it's possible that like Clark Phillips is a better zone cornerback. And I think that's absolutely true. Like, if you watch Clark Phillips, zone was his bread and butter. He did play more man later in his career. So, you know, I think going to zone is probably going to be good for Clark Phillips overall. So that could be what they're banking on, is like, he's going back to the scheme he played in college, more or less. You know, he's going back to a very familiar role. He's going to be able to start in that role, and it's going to be better for us. Maybe the same with Mike Hughes. You know, we'll see. But, you know, it's also, the Rams played very different styles of defense than the Falcons. you know, the Rams ran cover three like 40% of the time. I think the Falcons only ran it about 32% of the time, which is pretty low overall. NFL teams use cover three a lot, in case you don't know. The Rams use quarters like a lot. I think it was like over 20% of the time. The Falcons barely used quarters coverage. I think it was like in the low teens for them. The Falcons ran a lot of cover one, which I'm sure you noticed with Jesse Bates being back there. Interestingly, the Rams and the Falcons both used cover six a lot. That was like the third most used coverage for both teams. I thought that was interesting. But so it's going to be more zone. It's going to be different emphasis. You know, the Falcons are probably going to utilize, you know, a lot more moving around of various players, and especially on the defensive line. And we'll talk about that probably next. But, you know, they're obviously banking on the coaching and the scheme change helping out some of these players that maybe underperformed last year, because they just haven't brought in anyone else at corner. I mean, Antonio Hamilton, like, I think people are a little bit lower on Antonio Hamilton than they should be. I think he's a good depth piece and spot starter, like someone that could start. Like, if AJ Terrell had to miss time, you could put in Antonio Hamilton, and it's like, he will be like a solid starter for you. Obviously, going from like high end starter to solid starter is never great, but like, he's not just going to be an absolute catastrophe. But you know, so you need guys like Antonio Hamilton on your depth chart to be like your corner four and stuff like that. But you know, I think the concern is like corner two, like what's going on at corner two. And you know, strong safety also, you mentioned Adon, you know, it seems like it's going to be DeMarco Helams. Like, that does seem to be who's been playing the majority of snaps next to Jesse Bates. And I think it's pretty clear that he was the better of the two safeties last year, even though he's more limited in coverage. I think it's just they believe what, I guess I would say, from what I've been gathering about this scheme, a lot of times they will have a safety that plays more in the box. So if that's the case, I think it's entirely possible that we see Helms play more of a specific box safety role, and it's fine. Like, it doesn't, like, that's a better role for him. He doesn't have to cover the deep middle of the field, or the deep, you know, he's at best playing split safety stuff, and it's just not as big of a deal for him. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe that ends up being like, you can play a more specialized role for DeMarco Helms, and you know, Richie Grant maybe is the third safety. You know, and again, like, maybe Richie Grant can improve. It's just, we haven't seen it much over the last several years. We've been waiting for it. It is a contract year, so, you know, maybe that's when it all comes together for Grant. But they're just putting a lot of – yeah, no, go ahead. Yeah.
One thing is, and I agree with Nico in the chat, it's just – and this is where I'm coming from as well, where, you know, if it was one position, or if it was, like, you know, one player that was unproven that they're relying on coaching up, okay. But, you know, we're talking about – pretty much every cornerback not named AJ Terrell. You're talking about your starting strong safety and, you know, any of your backup safety options, you know, whether that's Helams or Richie Grant. You're talking about, and, you know, we'll get to the pass rush here in a minute, but, you know, you're talking about needing to coach up your pass rushers as well, of, you know, unproven guys whom you're hoping will take that next step. It's just a lot of players whom you are relying on and hoping to take, you know, a step all simultaneously, that are all going to be playing a lot of, you know, a lot of snaps for you, a lot of guys whom you are, you know, relying on. And that's just where it sort of feels like a big gamble, and yeah, not investing, you know, the appropriate resources in some of these positions. And, you know, as someone asked, what could they have invested? Go back to the draft. They pretty much after, and I'm not even talking about the Penix pick, I'm not even talking about the first round pick. You know, they spent an extra third rounder to move up to get Rook in the second round. And then they get another, you know, defensive line player in Braylon Trice, where, you know, hopefully Braylon Trice is that pass rusher that takes that step. And then in the fourth round, they take another defensive lineman. And, you know, they didn't address any secondary at all in the draft.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a big surprise. Yeah.
And they didn't really invest many resources. They didn't allocate many resources in free agency beyond some minimum contracts you know, in the secondary either. So it's a huge gamble. For them to have to rely on so many moving parts of, all right, we need this guy and we need this guy and we need this guy and we need this guy, all to take that next step for this defense to, you know, not completely regress into the mud, so to speak. And, you know, that's pretty much what I'm worried about, because, you know, if it was just cornerback two, if it was just safety, you know, and you know, you're relying on just a young, unproven guy there, then it's like, okay, that's fair. But this is so many positions.
Yeah, it is a lot. It is a lot. And, you know, and again, to be fair, like there's still, you know, Akello Witherspoon's still out there. John Johnson's still out there. These guys are clearly not, you know, they may be on speed dial for this team, that they're like, okay, we're going to see how we're looking going into training camp, and then we'll give you a call. There are free agents still out there, so this is not necessarily a settled depth chart. It's just, you know, you would have expected some more substantial moves to see how that goes. But we'll just have to see, like, how did, you know, do they follow through and just really leave the depth chart as it is going into 2024 season? I mean, I kind of find that hard to believe, but they've brought in a ton of, like, young competition, and like, maybe it's not a bad, I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea to just see a lot of young corners and play a lot of, you know, young corners and you know, edge rushers and all this stuff, like safety too, like getting in a bunch of these undrafted guys and all this to see how they look and maybe scout out some potential diamonds in the rough. But then, like, I wonder if going into training camp in, like, the first or second week, we see, like, okay, we're going to move on from some of these guys and bring in veterans. Like, you know, these guys are like, okay, we've seen what we need to see. We've picked out the ones that we want to compete. And then we're going to now fill out, you know, the veterans, because you don't want to wait too long and miss out on the veterans either. So, yeah,
and maybe that is the plan. And, you know, part of me hopes that is the plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can't know that for sure.
No,
so
no.
Until we do know that for sure, then, you know, all we can talk about is what we can talk about.
Yeah.
I would love to give you guys some special insight, you know, from the front office that, yeah, that is, you know, they are talking to these veteran players and, you know, this is the plan to do this, but, you know, I don't have that insight. And I don't think the team would want me to share that, even if I did.
Fontenot called me up today. We were chopping it up, you know. Yeah, Fontenot, please call me. Yeah, absolutely. I will chop it up with you about any topic whatsoever. But, you know, within reason, of course. Some things I don't know enough about to chop it up. But, yeah, I mean, we'll have to see how it develops. That's just one thing that we don't really know. And it could be the same thing at edge and stuff, too. On the topic of the defense, real quick, going into the defensive line, you know, this is, as you guys could tell, I have been trying to get some notes and things together for this, you know, how is the defense going to change article. So I have a couple things, but one of them was that, you know, the switch to more zone and looking up those numbers. The other thing is that the pass rush is going to be a lot different as opposed to Ryan Nielsen's defense. And the way they play up front is going to be very different too. And some of this stuff you guys have heard, you know, that the Rams like to drop Michael Hock into coverage, right? Their edge rusher, Michael Hock, they love to drop him. They would drop him all the time. But basically what the Rams would do is they do what is called sim pressures. So a sim pressure is like a blitz, but instead of it being technically a blitz, like a sim pressure means you send a linebacker, essentially. I guess it could be a corner or someone else too, but typically it's a linebacker. You blitz a linebacker and then you drop an edge rusher or a defensive lineman into coverage. So you're still sending four. So it's not technically a blitz. You're not sending an extra rusher. The Rams did this all the time. The Rams were third in the NFL in overall sim pressures. The Falcons were very low in that regard. But if you looked at just blitz rate, which most people look at, right? They don't go that deep into it. The Falcons and Rams were basically average in terms of blitz rate overall. I think it was like 16th and 17th, so they're right next to each other. But the Rams do these sim pressures, and what that means is that you're basically relying on one of your linebackers as a big pass rusher, someone, and you're also relying on one of your edge rushers being a competent zone coverage dropper. And I think that's interesting because the Falcons have two guys that seemingly fit that role pretty well, right? Caden Ellis, when he was signed, he was coming off a season with 7 sacks as a blitzer for the Saints. So you have to think, okay, Caden Ellis, if he's going to be their primary blitzer on sim pressures, that's a great role for him. He's been a very productive pass rusher before. Those 7 sacks would have led the Falcons in sacks last year. So if he's going to get a chance to blitz more, that's great. And then they also have Lorenzo Carter, who, as we know and I've talked about before, Lorenzo Carter is one of the best coverage edge rushers, which is something that you don't talk about a lot, but he is one of the best coverage edge rushers in terms of his ability to drop and change direction and actually play coverage in the NFL. That's just one of his unique skills as like a 10 of 10 athlete. I mean, I think he was one of the most athletic guys in his class. I think he was a perfect 10 at the time when he tested. So they do kind of have these pieces that seemingly are like much better fits in this defense, despite being like largely signed for last year's defense, which I find interesting that like Caden Ellis was signed by Ryan Nielsen, even though like he didn't really get to blitz a lot. That's probably not what they wanted. Obviously, I think losing Troy Anderson kind of moved Caden Ellis into that middle linebacker role, didn't really allow him to do all the stuff they wanted to do. So not necessarily saying that they were like wrong to sign him, but it's kind of like, I wonder if these pieces are actually better for the defense they're going to run this year than they were last year. And we talked about it some last year too, that they had all these pieces from the 3-4, like in Arnold Ebiketie and D'Angelo Malone and some of these other guys that like were kind of misfits in Ryan Nielsen's 4-3. So it's just interesting now that we've kind of come full circle back to the 3-4 again, and maybe these guys actually are just better scheme fits, and maybe you can get some extra production out of them just by nature of them being a better fit.
I mean, obviously that's the hope, right?
Like that is the hope. Yeah.
Oh, that's for sure the hope. Good, yeah. Please. And I mean, obviously they feel good about it, given the fact that, you know, they are bringing some of these same guys who have not had as much success before in the past. They're bringing them back and they're putting them in prominent roles, and you know, they are banking on, all right, these guys are going to, you know, excel more so in this scheme versus, you know, last year's scheme. And, you know, hopefully that is the case. But, you know, time will definitely tell. I know that's a boring answer and we can't really use that answer because then we wouldn't have any show until September.
Yeah. We have to have some take, like some kind of take. We can't just be like, well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And I mean, it helps, you know, it helps the defensive line that Grady Jarrett is going to be back. I don't know what the exact timeline is, but I think he may be back by week one. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see much of Grady Jarrett in training camp or much of him in the preseason. But, you know, Grady Jarrett is one of those guys who doesn't really, I feel like he's earned the right to not have to play the preseason, especially coming off of a major injury. You know, David Onyemata is going to be, you know, what we saw David Onyemata last year was excellent. Yep. Grady Jarrett, Grady Jarrett is also pretty versatile. He can play both a 4-3 or a 3-4. Onyemata might be your starting, you know, nose tackle in the center, and then Grady Jarrett can play one of those starting defensive end spots next to him. But then, you know, one of these pass rushers needs to take that step. And this is another one of those situations where you're relying on another one of those guys to take that step. You know, the main name would be, you know, hopefully Arnold Ebiketie.
Right.
You know, I saw last year, and this was, you know, a tweet, a PFF chart, pretty much looking at pass rush win rate percentage versus sack rate. And Arnold Ebiketie was actually second in the league in sack rate at over 4%. You know, only he and Trey Hendrickson. Hendrickson was the only player in the league that was ahead of him in pure sack rate. Now, the flip side of that coin, the more troubling part of that chart is Ebiketie was outside the top 25 in pass rush win percentage. And we know that pass rush win percentage, that's what's more indicative of long-term success. And you know, we speak from experience looking at Vic Beasley. Yeah.
We always end up back at Vic Beasley. We just can't escape.
he had that huge sack rate. He did not really have much of a win rate. I think he converted 52% of his pressures into sacks. And then we saw a major regression the next year, and hopefully that won't be the case with Ebiketie. And, you know, hopefully because Ebiketie actually has more than one pass rush move in his arsenal, unlike Vic Beasley, who never wanted to learn anything beyond the speed rush. and who didn't bother to show up to voluntary minicamp after Dan Quinn guaranteed his 50-year option. But you know, that's previous, you know, previous trauma that that we talked about in previous shows. But yeah, I mean, Arnold Lebicady is there. Braylon Trice, we mentioned him. I just mentioned him earlier. He's a rookie, so it wouldn't be fair to really expect him to really. It wouldn't be fair to expect him to light the world on fire. It would be great if he could. Braylon, if you want to have a rookie season breakout and become a team hero, then you know, be my guest. Zach Harrison is a guy I'm really excited to see this year. He had some really good flashes last year. We remember he was one of the darlings in training camp.
Yep.
And you know, now this is, well, we knew that he was more raw in year one. He wasn't really going to give you as much in year one as you develop him. But now going into year two, like, this is the year. Like, Zach Harrison could be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, that's if one of these guys, Harrison, Ebikay, should maybe D'Angelo Malone.
The real dark horse, D'Angelo Malone. It's his time.
The darkest of horses, yeah. You know, if one of these guys can really step up and become that, you know, that sort of alpha pass rusher for this team, I would feel a lot better, and I'm sure everyone would feel a lot better about this defense. But, you know, again, it's so many what ifs. It's so many what ifs with this defense. Almost at every single, like, you know, phase. I feel good about the linebackers, at least.
Yeah, yeah. Not too worried there. Yeah, and I mean, the defensive interior, I have no concerns. They went all in to sort of just make that the strength of the defense, which I think is not a bad idea. I definitely like beefing up the defensive interior, and you know, we'll see how much these guys contribute this year. But it's like last year they invested in, you know, David Onyemata, and that was obviously a big hit. Grady Jarrett hopefully will be healthy. It sounds like he's going to be full go for training camp. That's great news. But it's like, they're like, oh, well, if these guys miss time, you know, we saw this defense basically fall apart when Grady Jarrett got hurt, it took a step back. And then when Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata got hurt, it was just complete disaster. And like, they also lost the Kale London and some of these other guys, you know, it's just like, wow, that's a huge loss. So now they've got Ruka Roro. We'll see how much he's able to contribute as a rookie. I think in base packages, at least he'll be heavily involved. He's definitely, I think, already playing with the second team, it sounded like. So he's someone who has been rising up the depth chart pretty quick. Brandon Dorlus, you know, the same thing. You know, we'll see how quickly he gets on the field. I think most people are a little bit more skeptical of Zion Logue and how quickly he's going to be able to get on the field. You know, we'll have to see if Eddie Goldman sticks around, right? If he makes it through training camp or not. But, you know, they've definitely invested a ton in the interior defensive line. And I'm hoping that that group is going to be a big strength for this defense and help to alleviate maybe some of the issues of the edge pass rush. And again, if the Falcons are dropping Lorenzo Carter in coverage a lot and making Arnold Ebikady be the one that's going to rush the passer and instead like rushing Caden Ellis, you know, maybe that'll end up being a good fit. Maybe Caden Ellis will be a super productive pass rusher again. I mean, like I said, the year before the Falcons signed him, 7 sacks as a blitzer. So, you know, it's going to look different. We know that. Hopefully it will be good. That's the one thing we're, you know, and again, like if they can just not fall off a cliff in terms of defense, like again, people are like, oh, well, they didn't change any starters. You know, it's like, well, you know, they were actually a good defense last year, like against all odds, like this was a pretty good defense. Not, you know, the last few games notwithstanding, but, you know, for most of the year, this was a top 10 pass defense. Like they were good in terms of pressure rate, even though they didn't generate a ton of sacks. I mean, but if you told me last year that we'd have 40 sacks, I think everyone would be like, oh yeah, we'll take that any day of the week. They had 40 sacks. Guess what? They did it. So, you know, we'll see how it changes, obviously, with a new defensive coordinator, a lot of new defensive staff. You know, I don't think anyone's expecting them to be like a fringe sort of top 10 defense again this year, but if they could just like not fall off a cliff and be like the 18th defense or something, I think the upgrades on offense will make it so that you don't really notice basically the defense falling off a little bit, because the offense was so bad, right? I mean, we all know the offense was so bad. So, you know, you can have some addition or subtraction by addition there. Like, you don't need the defense to be as good if your offense isn't going to turn it over constantly. So, and keep in mind, like, all those defensive stats were with the Falcons offense turning the ball over at a ridiculous rate. So a lot of that scoring had to do with the offense just turning the ball over all the time. And it really shows you how well the defense actually did do last year, despite all the issues. I mean, I think they deserve all the props for really doing their damnedest to keep this team in games, even though the offense rarely reciprocated, unfortunately. But
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, one more thing I wanted to talk about in terms of big changes is the shift offensively. And if you guys listened to my pod, you know, last 2 weeks ago or whatever it was with, you know, talking about, obviously we're going to go to 11 personnel, but not only are they going to go to 11 personnel, three wide receiver sets, one tight end, one running back as their sort of standard, they use the same guys pretty much every play in Los Angeles. Like, it's not just like we're going to have three receivers and we rotate. It was like, no, it's going to be Puka, it's going to be Cooper Kupp, and it's going to be, you know, Tutu Atwell / DeMarcus Robinson, depending on the time of year. And those guys are going to play like every snap. Like, it's not going to be this Arthur Smith offense where we just are just rotating receivers seemingly at random. And they're going to probably have a tight end that plays a lot. One tight end's going to play a lot. And now maybe it's like Kyle Pitts is actually going to be like the slot receiver, quote unquote. And like, they're going to have Charlie Werner be the tight end, quote unquote. You know, we'll see how that develops, but they're going to play one running back most of the time. And by most of the time, I mean like 70 to 80% of the time or more. They're going to play one tight end most of the time, like 70% of the time. And they're going to play three receivers as much as they can with a fourth guy that rotates in if somebody needs a breath. But it's going to be the same guys on the field pretty much every snap. And the reason the Rams do this is because they don't want to tip the defense off to anything that they're doing. They want it to look the same every snap. Which is sort of the opposite of what Arthur Smith wanted to do, which was to have all these different packages that were sort of designed to take, to force the defense into doing uncomfortable things like defending multiple tight ends all the time or going into their base defense. You know, and then the Falcons throwing the ball. Unfortunately, they couldn't throw the ball, so that didn't really work either. But it's like a huge change, like massive change in terms of philosophy. What do you think about that change, John? I mean, it's going to be drastic. Like, the Falcons used, and this is a stat we quote a lot, but the Falcons use three receivers at the lowest rate in the NFL. The Rams use it at the most. So we're probably going to be a lot closer to the Rams number than we were to the Falcons number this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where I'm not going to sit here and be like, all right, this, you know, this scheme is better than this. This is better than that, because, you know, we're not sitting here deciding what schemes are the best. What, you know, all we can talk about is what, you know, what the Falcons are going to do, what they did last year. And, you know, one of the maddening things with Arthur Smith was, yeah, he was changing out a lot of shit. And, you know, there were a lot of moving parts. But the big issue was that he wasn't really putting his best players, you know, in position to sort of, you know, take advantage of opportunities. Like last year, the big complaint, you know, throughout the year was, and throughout many years, not just last year, was the fact that Arthur Smith got too cute. Like, I'm not going to sit here and punch holes in his scheme because, you know, I don't know, you know, an offensive scheme better than Arthur Smith, who is, you know, an offensive coordinator in the NFL does. You know, but one of the big issues was he got way too cute. Like, he got too creative. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was so creative that against Tennessee inside the five, and, you know, he's handing the ball off to Jonnu Smith, your backup tight end, so he can throw the ball to Michael Pruitt, your third string tight end, instead of just, you know, using your star players. It felt like he thought that he could just, like, use any player to just outsmart the defensive coordinator. And the thing about the NFL is the defensive coordinators are also really smart. And the best thing you can do is utilize the weapons to the best of your ability. And this is something that Sean McVay has done, you know, with beautiful simplicity. And that's it. I'm not calling Sean McVay's scheme, you know, simple or anything, but I am talking about the way that he uses his best players. It just feels like a common sense approach, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, Cooper Kupp is my best wide receiver circa 2022. We're going to get the ball to him a lot. You know, Kyren Williams last year when he wasn't injured was really, really effective. We're going to hand the ball off to him a lot. You know, last year it was Puka Nacua. You know, Puka Nacua burst onto the scene. We're going to use him a lot. We're going to force feed him. And, you know, that's something where, I mean, one, all the fantasy football players are going to love it. You know, we already see Bijan Robinson talking about how he's going to be in that Christian McCaffrey-esque role where he's, you know, being utilized a lot. And, you know, that's something that everyone lost their minds over last year about Bijan Robinson being underutilized.
Yeah.
I mean, this year it will be, you know, we're going to see what Kyle Pitts is made of. Kyle Pitts is going to get he's going to have every opportunity to be successful. You know, Drake London, I think Drake London is going to have a major breakout season.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to get, I think, over 1,000 yards easily.
No, I mean, that doesn't even need to be said. Like, I think Drake London is going to go 1,200 yards this year, like plus. You know, Bijan Robinson is going to be utilized a lot. And they're going to utilize Bijan Robinson like the top 10 pick he is. They're going to utilize Darnell Mooney a lot. They're not paying him that money, you know, for no reason. And Darnell Mooney is a guy that, you know, in fairness, he did beat man coverage a lot. He wasn't great as a wide receiver one, but, you know, in that complimentary role, they're hoping to really, you know, strike a special connection between he and Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, yeah, it is something where I'm not here to throw darts, you know, at various offensive schemes, but, you know, that common sense approach of we're going to, you know, give the ball to our best players a lot is going to be something that I think Falcons fans will find refreshing after the last few years of, you know, a lot of gimmicks and a lot of, you know, overly cute plays and a lot of sort of, you know, galaxy brain type plays that we saw.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this brings me back to my offensive show. Cause I a lot of the stuff you mentioned, you know, is absolutely true. And I know Joe mentioned it too, especially with regards to the Falcons run game in particular being so predictable. It didn't matter how they dressed it up. Didn't matter what formation was on the field. You knew it was going to be outside zone. Like, it was going to be outside zone like 90% of the time. And the stats bear that out. You know, in terms of the run game, like, the Falcons were the most wide zone, outside zone heavy team of any team in the NFL. The Falcons ran the ball inside the lowest of any team in the NFL. They ran inside just 13% of the time, which is ridiculously low, by the way. You always run outside more typically, but like, I mean, that low is crazy because they just barely ran it. I mean, one out of every 10 run plays was inside. Like, they just ran outside every time. The other thing is that the Falcons basically ran exclusively zone, almost entirely zone runs, whereas the Rams actually have this year was one of the big things. And one of the reasons I think their run game just got unlocked this year was they became much more balanced. They ran power scheme runs about half the time. And they split their run game and made it a lot more diverse with some power stuff and some zone stuff. They still did the zone runs, but they mixed in a lot more duo and stuff like that, as opposed to just running outside zone. So that, I think, helped them a lot because the NFL has learned how to defend the outside zone. Like, Kyle Shanahan used it so much and everyone copied it. Now everyone just sits on outside zone because that's what everyone was running. So you gotta diversify, and that's what Shanahan's done. That's what McVay's done, and I think the Falcons are going to employ the same thing this year. The other thing you mentioned, you know, with the passing game, like, the Falcons are going to target their receivers a lot more. In case it wasn't obvious to people, the Falcons targeted their receivers at the lowest rate in the NFL. They threw the ball to wide receivers just 38% of the time, which of course was the lowest. The Rams threw their passes to the wide receivers 71% of the time, which was first in terms of the most, you know, passes to wide receivers. Falcons threw the ball to tight ends at the highest rate in the NFL, third highest to the running backs, which is even funnier when you consider that, you know, Kyle Pitts, like, basically just didn't get targeted, and they still, because they just threw the ball to Jonnu Smith so much that they were still the number one team in terms of targets for tight ends, with Kyle Pitts basically not being that involved. But otherwise, this is still going to be a balanced offense, like, overall. Like, the Rams were not this, like, pass-heavy offense. I think the Rams were, like, 58 to 41% in terms of the pass-run split. Which was only 25th most passing. So it's not like the Rams were still one of the more run-heavy, quote-unquote, teams. There's also a stat, the passing rate over expectation, which is, like, in a neutral situation, are you, like, you know, are you passing the ball more or less often? And the Rams were actually negative in that stat, minus 2.8%, which is about 21st. So they were relatively balanced to run-heavy offense. But the Falcons, of course, were the second most run-heavy team in terms of pass-run split, and they were the lowest team in terms of pass rate over expectation. They passed the ball about 10% less than you would expect in a neutral situation, which is not surprising if you watched the Falcons' offense last year. But it was interesting to see, like, some of the things that we saw be, like, absolutely shown to be true in the stats. Like, man, I feel like this team runs outside zone, like, all the time. It's like, yeah, they do. They ran the most of anyone, and they barely ran inside. So these are all things that are going to change. Like, this is not going to repeat itself. And so this is my, you know, flag going up to people saying you should probably invest in the Falcons in fantasy because they're going to feature their players. That's what the Rams did. So if the Falcons are anything like the Rams, they're going to throw the ball to their top three receivers. Kyle Pitts might be considered a receiver in this offense. They're going to have one tight end featured and one running back featured, and that's it. Like, they're not really going to try to distribute anything else. So there's my soapbox. In case you guys didn't watch the previous show, I covered all this stuff. But, you know, it's going to be really different on offense, I guess, is the main takeaway from that. I'm excited to see it. Adnan, are you excited to see the change?
I mean, yeah, it'll be refreshing. I'm just excited, you know, to see wins. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what matters. Like, yeah. Had this team won 11 games, 12 games last year, we wouldn't be sitting here complaining about, you know, how certain guys were used and, you know, what trick plays were run and what trick plays didn't work. But, you know, after you win 7 games following the expectations that we had last season, then it's like, okay, this clearly isn't working. We need to make a change, and the team did make a change to their credit. And now, you know, we are emulating a Los Angeles Rams team that has been one of the more successful franchises over the past few years. We poached, you know, and the offensive coordinator from there. So, you know, we are just that latest in that string of teams that are trying to emulate that Sean McVay type style. Remember that one off season where anyone associated with Sean McVay just got a head coaching job following, I think, the first following that, I think that 2017 Rams season where, you know, Sean McVay and them were just fantastic. And then the Falcons, you know, beat them in the playoffs. That was actually the last playoff win for the Falcons that happened. So, you know, that just shows you how long it's been. But yeah, I mean, of course I'm excited. I'm excited to see some of these top 10, you know, top 10 drafted players actually have a chance to, you know, prove that they were worth that pick in the top 10. Like, yeah. It's hard to blame Drake London for, you know, the downfalls that have plagued this team. It's hard to blame Drake London for not putting up gaudy stats given what he was working with. It's hard, you know, to blame Kyle Pitts for not putting up the gaudy stats that we're expecting out of the highest drafted tight end of all time. You know, Bijan Robinson did have some solid stats last year, but they could have been better had he been featured more. Yeah. So, you know, this will be the year where all of that will sort of flip on its head a little bit. And, you know, Drake London's going to get all the targets he can handle, barring injury. Kyle Pitts is going to get all the targets he can handle, barring injury. Bijan Robinson is going to get a lot of work. Like, I would take Bijan Robinson second in fantasy football drafts after Christian McCaffrey. I think he is going to be that good this season in this scheme.
Yeah, no, I'm all in on Kyle Pitts this year. You guys know that. I think people have given up on Kyle Pitts way, way, way too early. You know, and it's like the quarterback. You can't separate the quarterback from this situation. And the only time in Kyle Pitts' career that he played with a good quarterback was in 2021 when Kyle Pitts almost broke the rookie tight end records. He obviously broke all the Falcons records. He averaged over 15 yards per reception, over 1,000 yards, was a great player. And I want to bring this up just because to illustrate my point of that one season can change a lot in terms of perception. So I don't think people realize just how similar the careers of Kyle Pitts and Nico Collins have been in terms of stats. But if you ask someone today, is Nico Collins a bust? He's only got one season of more than two touchdowns and more than, you know, 400 something yards, right? Very similar to Kyle. But everyone thinks Nico Collins is like the next big thing at receiver because he's coming off a great season. Kyle Pitts' season happened to be his first season, then he's had two down years. So, I mean, obviously recency bias is a thing, but what I'm trying to say is like Kyle Pitts and Nico Collins both barely have over 2,000 yards. Collins has a few more touchdowns. They all came this year with a good quarterback, notably. But like Kyle Pitts is over a year younger than Nico Collins, even though they were both drafted the same year.
Just playing devil's advocate about that.
Yeah,
Collins was the 89th pick.
He was.
So
yes,
but draft pedigree definitely matters
Pedigree matters in terms of if you want to talk about whether, you know, the player's good or not, but everyone thinks Nico Collins is like the next big thing at receiver, irregardless of the draft pick. You know, you could talk about the value proposition and all that. That's true. But like Nico Collins has a good year, everyone's back on board. And so that's what I'm saying. If Kyle Pitts has 1300 yards and 8 touchdowns, no one's going to be questioning the pick next year. You know, is all I'm trying to say. Like they'll be like, oh, okay, well he's the best tight end in the NFL. If he has that stat line, he'll probably be the most productive tight end in the NFL. I mean, maybe Kelsey's still pushing those numbers, but you know, it wouldn't take a whole lot, I guess, is what I'm saying, for Kyle Pitts to assume the mantle of the most productive tight end in the NFL, especially with Kelsey's career kind of coming down a bit. So we'll see.
The big competition, and I mean, yeah, Kelsey is still Kelsey, but he's what, 34? He's gonna wind
down.
Yeah,
almost 35. Yeah.
The big competition for that mantle of like top tight end is, you know, Mark Andrews if he can shake off the injuries, and you know, Sam Laporta, who, you know, came on incredible last year, and you know, we'll see what happens over in Detroit, but you know, Ben Johnson is still there. I'm sure Sam Laporta's going to have another very productive season. But yeah, tight end remains the wasteland that it has been for a long time. And I mean, obviously no disrespect to, you know, guys like Dalton Kincaid or Trey McBride or, you know, any of those guys, TJ Hawkinson, who's coming off of an injury. But yeah, it's rough in the tight end realm. And yeah, Kyle Pitts has, you know, forget 1,300. If Kyle Pitts has 900 yards this year, then he'll be talked about as a very elite tight end. And, you know, hopefully more than 3 touchdowns, though. So
that would be nice. Let's hope for that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, 900 yards and 6 touchdowns, and we're talking about Pitts like, you know, a top-tier upper echelon tight end in this league.
Yeah, and he's still got time is all I'm trying to say. Like, he's 23 years old, you know. Like, he's younger than Michael Penix by a lot. So, like, you know, his story is still being written is all I'm trying to say. And I'm excited to see it. And that's one of those things when you draft a player that young. Like, if they take a couple of years, he's still younger than pretty much every tight end in the NFL. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, I did see some news come across the timeline. It's not Falcons related. It is Saints related. Apparently Saints tight end Juwan Johnson, who has definitely given the Falcons the business the last couple years that he's been there. He suffered a lower leg injury today and is expected to miss quite a bit of time. So I don't know if that's like threatening significant season time, but when they say something like that at this point, he may miss quite a few games. So, you know, we'll see, but that's a big loss to the Saints, who they have Foster Moreau, I guess.
Juwan Johnson is their starting tight end.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at it just purely from a Falcons perspective, the Saints are what, week 4?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's that early part of the season. So if Juwan Johnson has to start the season on the pup, he has to miss the first 6 games, then yeah, he is going to miss that meeting in Atlanta. So, I mean, yeah, it's a loss. It's a big loss for them. You know, that's still a starter and a guy that's, you know, familiar with Derek Carr from last year, to whom I'm sure they were hoping would take that next step as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then the Saints are also moving Talisi Fuaga to left tackle, which I don't believe he ever played in college, which probably a good long-term move for them, but that's going to be a rough start for Fuaga. Fuaga was a great right tackle. So especially given that Ryan Ramczyk's not going to play probably, like, I don't know why you wouldn't just let Fuaga play right tackle and just let him get adjusted to the NFL that way, but...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
man, that Saints offensive line could be an absolute disaster. So we will see how that situation shakes out there. But this is a Falcons program, and we've talked a lot about the Falcons. We're going to go ahead and wrap this one up, guys. Thank you for joining us tonight. Please like, subscribe. I know Corey had a quick question. Thank you for the donation. Corey says, Adnan, what should the Hawks do with the number one pick, and why is it draft Sar?
Oh, it's absolutely draft Sar. Like, I'm all in on Sar, and, you know, I've sort of fooled myself, talked myself into believing that there is no other, like, scenario, even though I know that that's not the case. You know, I'm just telling myself that Rhys Sachet and Donovan Clingane are just smoke screens because, you know, it's that time of year, but I'm very, very worried that the front office is going to make the wrong decision and not draft Sar. And hopefully I'm very wrong about that.
Yeah, you know, we'll have to, hopefully this will be the start of the Hawks and the Falcons making good decisions. You know, this year they'll prove that they're making the right calls here, but I'll believe it when I see it. I know you will too. So thanks again for joining us, guys. Please like, subscribe. We will have, of course, I'll be having a show with Daniel Flick coming out on Friday, getting his notes from a mini camp this week. He was on site for that. So that'll be our look into the practices themselves. And then, of course, we will be into the deep dead zone after this. The NFL offseason officially ended today with the last mini camp practice, quote unquote. So we will be getting into the dead zone content here, but it's okay. We'll have lots of fun stuff for you as we get ramped up for training camp. Of course, follow, subscribe, like, leave us that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice for listening to the audio. And again, thanks to my co-host Adnan Ikic. He's at Say Which Way. Adnan, anything you'd like to let people know about?
I'm just going to plug thefalcoholic.com, because, you know, everyone is continuing to do great work through this period of really nothing going on, and now that period will really, really slow down up until training camp, because, you know, this is, you know, this late June through early July, or most of July period, is easily the, you know, the quietest in the NFL, but, you know, maybe we'll get some tampering news. Hopefully news that the NFL found no indications of tampering and that the Falcons are not going to be punished.
It's a little odd that it was reported with, like, very sort of certain language, like it's expected to be wrapped up, like we should get resolution this week, and then just like nothing for over like
that's
a week and a half now.
Like
that's odd.
What worries me, of like, okay, like, you know, because it was Adam Schefter who came out with that report early last week of, all right, it's probably going to get resolved by the end of this week, and then, you know, nothing still. It sort of feels eerie at this point. It feels like a calm before the storm. And,
yeah,
you know, hopefully it doesn't mean that it's going to be something that's much more than what we think. And hopefully it doesn't mean that the NFL has found, you know, extra stuff that would indict any alleged tampering.
Yes, alleged tampering. Okay, they're probably going to announce that, you know, there was nothing. There was no tampering. That was the tampering was the friends we made along the way. So, you know, we'll see. But thank you guys so much for joining us on the Falcoholic Live tonight. We will be back next Wednesday with some more great content for you guys. Please check out the Patreon. Check out the channel memberships. We're going to be firing up the Patron Fantasy League starting in July, so you can get involved with that real soon. Also, channel members get access to the Fantasy League. So, which, you know, if you're a video viewer, you probably want the YouTube channel memberships because you get early access to the videos. If you're a podcast enjoyer, you probably want the Patreon because you get the early access to the podcast episodes. Both give you the same things, all that stuff. But we'll see you then, guys. Thanks again. Please like, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'll be back on Wednesday. I'll be back with Daniel Flick on Friday. Until then, guys, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Have a great night, folks.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel. And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.